It's Idaho Matters on a Friday. Hi, I'm George Prentice in for Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday, time for our reporter roundtable, and joining us today are Melissa Davlin from Idaho Public Television, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, and Mike Sharp with KIVI 6 on your side television. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First, we have some breaking news. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has just ruled in favor of Adri Edmo, a transgender prisoner who sued the state of Idaho for gender confirmation surgery. And joining us to talk about this breaking story is Boise State Public Radio reporter James Dawson and reporter Amanda Peacher from the Mountain West News Bureau, and they've been following this story for months. Jimmy, I'd like to bring you in first. The ruling just came down. I know you're still reading through it. What's the crux of the ruling as you see it?
Yeah, so the court found that Adri Edmo would, quote, suffer irreparable harm in the form of ongoing mental anguish and possible physical harm if she is not provided gender confirmation surgery. So basically, they're agreeing with her whole hog in this argument. The state appealed this case a while ago to this the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. After the district court also sided with Edmo. And if you remember, and Amanda can add some more context to this, Adri Edmo has harmed herself and tried to harm herself several times while she's been in prison.
What did the court say about the state's argument in terms of them denying the surgery to Edmo to the state?
Well, they really just found that the state's arguments really held no water at all. It also really rejected this Fifth Circuit ruling from a while ago involving a Texas transgender inmate, saying that, you know, that old ruling relied on incorrect or at best outdated premises, that gender confirmation surgery is not effective or necessary in treating gender dysphoria. This ruling is also not broad. It applies to Adri, but it does say that basically gender confirmation surgery can be, you know, a way to potentially help alleviate symptoms of gender dysphoria, and if it is medically necessary, which is what Adri's lawyers have been arguing all along.
Amanda Peacher, Adri Edmo is the first person to possibly get this surgery through a court order, but talk to us a little bit about the legal landscape outside of the Ninth Circuit.
Well, as Jimmy mentioned, circuit courts have weighed in on this topic in the past, but it's always gone the other way. Both the Fifth Circuit and the First Circuit judges have ruled that the same surgery, gender confirmation surgery, is not necessary for two different inmates. So this is really an important case for transgender health care for the prison system. And while it does apply specifically to Edmo, it could be persuasive for other prison systems beyond the state of Idaho and for other courts should other inmates challenge their system similarly.
Jimmy, I know it's early. You've reached out to the Department of Correction, and they were a bit surprised that you knew before they did.
Yeah. A spokesperson I reached out to actually asked me for a copy of the ruling. They had not heard of it. But that's understandable. I mean, this ruling just came down an hour and 10 minutes ago from the Ninth Circuit. So really not too many people have had a chance to look at this in depth. We're still going through it. And I'm also waiting on a call back from the governor's office to see if they have any comment as well.
Melissa Devlin.
I'm really curious about the implications moving forward for other inmates, because Adri Edmo is not the only inmate in Idaho who is suffering from gender dysphoria or identifies as transgender. There are, you know, obviously it's a minority, but there are a number of other inmates in the system who are experiencing the same thing, who are trying to seek medical treatment and are at different stages of that, too. So how much this opens the door for those other inmates, I think, is going to be really interesting moving forward and something that we're going to be keeping an eye on at Idaho Reports. And I'm sure that you find folks at BSPR are going to be doing the same thing.
Yeah. Scott McIntosh.
Well, and I would imagine the state would petition to appeal this ruling. And I got to imagine that they probably feel their chances are pretty good at the U.S. Supreme Court if the Supreme Court were to take on this case.
You can see where this is heading.
Yeah.
Amanda, can you weigh in a bit more on the possible fate of other transgender inmates?
Well, let's be clear. There are around 60 to 70 inmates in the Idaho prison system who identify as transgender that we know of, and then about 40 of those have been diagnosed with gender dysphoria. Now, not everyone with gender dysphoria needs gender confirmation surgery, nor is it medically necessary for everyone with that diagnosis. So it doesn't mean there's going to be suddenly a rush of inmates who are qualified for this surgery. It would still have to be deemed medically medically necessary by medical providers. So, you know, it is an important ruling in the sense that it affirms that this is medically necessary care for inmates and that the state has to provide it for EDMO. But, you know, it is a specific situation when any individual, inmate or not, qualifies for this level of surgery.
Yeah, and that's what the state was really arguing, too, is that there was no question that they thought that Adri Edmo had gender dysphoria and was diagnosed with gender dysphoria. That wasn't an issue. It was whether the surgery was medically necessary to help alleviate that severe gender dysphoria. And clearly the Ninth Circuit thought it was.
And Amanda brings up a good point in that there are, you know, not everyone who has gender dysphoria or identifies as transgender has the same desired outcome as far as their medical treatment. I'm really curious, as far as the Idaho Department of Corrections is concerned, how this might affect the conversation for treating people, for diagnosing people in the first place. Because again, if you say, you know, I'm experiencing some symptoms of gender dysphoria, it's not a guarantee that a medical professional in the IDOC system is going to say, you know what, yes, you know, you're going to get this diagnosis. We've heard from inmates who have been denied a diagnosis in the first place. And so, you know, the gender confirmation surgery is just one very small part of this, quite frankly. There are a number of different types of treatment. And there's also a path to getting diagnosed and receiving therapy in the first place.
Amanda, can you break this down a little simpler for some of our listeners who may not know the detail of Adri Edmo? The defense truly was that this was cruel and unusual in her defense, yes?
Exactly. And so she was diagnosed with gender dysphoria by the prison system in 2012 and has been receiving hormones since that time. And so Edmo's case and the case that her lawyers made is that her gender dysphoria is so severe that hormones are not enough to alleviate that gender dysphoria. What is medically necessary for her is gender confirmation surgery. And so that is the case that she made, and obviously the Ninth Circuit has now agreed.
Amanda Peacher and James Dawson, Boise State Public Radio. You can learn more about Adri Edmo's case by listening to our investigative podcast. That is called Locked, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's our Friday Reporters Roundtable. Joining us today are Melissa Davlin from Idaho Public Television, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman. Mike Sharp is here from KIVI 6 on your side. Mike, let's continue our conversation with a story that you folks have been covering over at 6, and that is lead levels in our public school systems.
Right. There were 23 schools we found last year that had elevated levels of lead that were found in the faucets and fixtures. The school district had pushed that information out. We had to go through a lot of unsearchable PDFs to kind of trace down that information. But once we did, we pushed for answers about what their process was going to be. It sounded like at least two of the schools were being rebuilt, and so there wasn't really any plan to adjust anything until after the school year. For each of those schools, they had to go through the process of providing water for the students to use to drink. So water bottles and water from outside sources had to come in. And so this year we wanted to check in, you know, with school starting. What we found was of those 23 schools, there are still 8 that have not been completed. 2 of those are about halfway done. The rest are less than halfway done.
Does that mean that they're handing out bottles of water at 8 schools?
They are still continuing to hand out water from other sources, yes. They are expecting those faucets and fixtures to be fixed, but the process has not been completed for those schools. I mean, I think it's 10 schools have been fixed at this point.
They've been working on it for the better part of half a year. So
yeah,
what does that
yeah.
mean? How much longer?
They did not give us a hard time on when they expected it to happen. They said they expected it to happen quickly. But, I mean, quickly is one of those words that could mean a lot of different things. At this point, we do know, we've confirmed they've spent about between $9,000 and $10,000 of school district money. But largely the money that they are using is part of a $500,000 federal grant they received thanks to the help of the DEQ to help fund these programs. So it's not like it's something that's going to be cutting into, hopefully, school programs.
Melissa Davlin, Idaho Public Television, whenever we talk about a new school year, soon enough conversations go to vaccination records in Idaho.
Absolutely.
And the conversation turns into a debate. What's new in this?
Well, it's a question not necessarily of what's new, but what might be next. And so right now, as part of its rulemaking process, the Department of Health and Welfare, along with all the other state agencies that have administrative rules, are holding public hearings on the rules that have been renewed. And the department held its first of six hearings in Boise yesterday. I attended the meeting, and of the 23 people who testified, 22 commented on immunizations. And of those, the majority asked the state to either revise or completely do away with any sort of mandates that they place on children who attend public school or attend daycare.
At
any level, right. So right now, the state, through its administrative rules, has a set of vaccinations, and any parent who has enrolled their child in school knows this is how, you know, in order to enroll your child.
You bet.
These are the vaccinations they need to be up to date on. But there is a big, big caveat to that, and that is Idaho has some of the most lenient exemption rules. So for any reason, you can write a note and say, I wish my child to be exempted from these vaccination requirements, and they're going to be exempted. The public school can't do anything about that. Daycares are a different matter. They're a private business, and there are some that do reject children who are not fully immunized. There's no, as far as I know, there's no case law that challenges that, that backs that up. But because they're a private business, this is how some of them operate. But the biggest debate is around public schools. Right now, the immunization opt-out rates for last school year, those opt-out rates have been going up. Kevin Richard of Idaho Education News reported that 7.7% of Idaho students statewide are not up to date or have asked for exemptions on their immunizations. So while these parents are bringing up concerns for multiple reasons, whether it's quite frankly, scientifically unfounded fears about vaccine safety or a broader debate about the role of government in parents making medical decisions for their children, whatever reason they're asking the state to get rid of these rules, the fact of the matter is a parent in Idaho can exempt their child from these vaccine requirements for any reason. And if anything, the state legislature has made it easier for parents to do so in the last year. It used to be that you had to fill out a form from the school district or the school to get that exemption. Now I could write it on any piece of paper. I could write it on a bar napkin and send it with my child and say, I want my kid to be exempted. And the school has to accept that.
Is this heading toward the 2020 session?
I don't know that this is going to come up, but I have been so surprised by these lawmakers and what they do in administrative rules, and especially since so much with the administrative rule process is up in the air right now after the legislature failed to extend the rules and Governor Little had to do it and the agencies are working by themselves to extend these rules. Who knows?
Scott McIntosh, can we talk just for a couple of minutes about some news that came out in the last 24 hours, and that is the city of Boise has decided to pursue their defense of their anti-camping ordinance to the degree after being shot down by the Ninth Circuit twice. But they're filing with the U.S. Supreme Court and want the high court to take this up.
Yeah, it's really interesting. They filed a petition to have their case heard before the U.S. Supreme Court. This is dealing with the city's ordinance that prohibits sleeping in public places and, you know, primarily targeted at homeless people who might be camping out in a park or on the sidewalk. And the city has argued that they have a right to regulate that. The Ninth Circuit, of course, shot them down and ruled that it is cruel and unusual punishment to say that, you know, to cite a homeless person for sleeping on the street if they don't have another place to stay. So the city of Boise is continuing to fight it. They've asked the Supreme Court to hear the case. Very interesting little note to this is that, you know, the Supreme Court gets asked, there are thousands of requests, and the Supreme Court hears about 150 a year. And so you might say, well, the chances of the Supreme Court taking this up are very slim. However, the city of Boise has hired a very prominent law firm from Los Angeles, and one of the lawyers on the case is a guy by the name of Ted Olson.
Right.
And Ted Olson is a very conservative, well-known, well-respected attorney.
Very successful.
Very successful. He's argued 63 times before the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't know what his track record is, but we do know a few really prominent cases. One was Gore versus Bush, the 2000 election. He successfully argued to the Supreme Court to not have Florida do a recount in that election. He was also the lawyer in the Citizens United case, arguing on free speech basis. And then he was also argued in favor of same-sex marriages on life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness argument. So he's a very interesting character, and I think just because he's involved, I
hundreds of thousands of dollars for this preliminary contract with this firm.
Right. I think it's $250,000?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I spoke to Mayor Beter about an hour ago about this, and quite simply he said, we can't afford another Cooper Court, and we can't get to that point. And of course, the next question was, well, if it's a threat to public safety, et cetera, you can do something about that. He says, we can't get to that point again.
Right. And he's very...
That's the argument.
Yeah. He's very strongly worded in this. He says, cities will not have the tools they need to prevent a humanitarian crisis on their own streets if they're not successful in this case. So really interesting stuff.
Okay, guys. Ready? We've got a quiz for you today. You ready?
So ready. Yeah.
Okay. The Idaho Falls Bandits were welcomed home by cheering crowds after they did what?
They won the Babe Ruth? Was it Babe Ruth?
Close
World
enough.
Series?
No.
American Legion.
Cal Ripken?
American Legion.
Yeah. First Idaho team. In Ada County this week, some trash went uncollected. Why?
There's a fight. The fight between Ada County and Republic.
Republic is losing the contract and their drivers aren't showing up for work. What happened in the Napa School District this week?
They had a cyber attack.
Yes.
Shut down the computers.
Teachers, pens and paper and blackboards. Blank delivered her first State of the University address this week.
President Marlene Trump of Boise State University.
Very good. Idaho Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin and attorneys general from across the U.S. are creating a coalition with phone companies to do what?
Fight illegal robocalls.
Do you think they're going to actually do it?
Gosh, I hope so.
Boy, wouldn't that be
like, I'm not supposed to create the coalition
or fight it?
Yeah, right.
Because I think they will create the coalition.
Okay.
I have to say, as a reporter, I'm supposed to stay neutral on these things.
This would be so great.
To heck with robocalls.
Okay, and here's the bonus one. Boise firefighters have already begun selling their 2020 edition of what really hot item?
A calendar.
The fireman calendar. And there's two versions this year.
Oh.
One with their physiques and one where they just pose with pets for the Idaho Humane Society.
Aww. That's sweet.
Which one are you getting?
I'll stick with the pets. Thank you.
Okay. Scott?
Oh, I'm getting the racy one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mike, yeah, racy, right?
I mean, can I do both? I need more than one calendar.
Right.
Mike Sharp, Scott McIntosh, Melissa Davlin, thank you so very much on this very busy news day. Idaho Matters continues in just one moment. We'll go to the movies with filmmaker A.J. Eaton.